Welcome to the Pussy Parlor Podcast. I am your host, Kitty Velour. I am a pole dance artist, glittery showgirl, and a pole dance and floor work instructor. Here at the parlor, I interview new guests each week, including pole dancers, strippers, showgirls, sex workers, and cabaret creatures of all kinds. Our parlor guest for today is John Celestis, a show host, contortionist, boylesque, and the darkest darling of cabaret. John is an international headliner and first Greek boylesque performer. He has a distinctive, dark, androgynous look, and his performances are intense and sensual, bringing out the darker side of your soul. In today's episode, we talk about John's journey into the performance world, stage mishaps, rejecting gender stereotypes, and performing all over Europe. Hi, John. Welcome to the Pussy Parlor. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me so much.
It's exciting.
I'm very excited.
I just want to start at the beginning and ask you, how did you get into performing?
Ooh, that is a very interesting and tough question in my case. Well, I've been a dancer since I was 2.5 years old. I started with Greek dances, but then I stopped performing, but I never stopped dancing or training. And then I started again because I was desperate for the attention and, you know, all the trauma I had built up all these years. It had to have a creative outlet. But then this evolved. So I started doing swing dance. I started performing swing dance in 2010. And 2011, I met burlesque for the first time in my life and fell in love instantly. And I started doing it as well.
And how did you get into burlesque? Did you see a show or did someone invite you to a class?
So there were not really classes in Greece, and definitely they're not still classes as we have them in the rest of the world, because it's still a very prudent community, I would say. But I was performing swing dance in Charleston for a magazine's birthday, and they had brought a burlesque troupe from Berlin, and I fell in love instantly with the host, Jack Woodhead, and with the art form itself. That was a 2-day event, and the third day I got to host a cabaret event in Athens, and they were watching, and that was too much pressure.
Wow. And this was all in Greece. How does it compare to the UK?
Ooh, it's still in a very primitive stage. There was a lot of burlesque with a dancey bit, like showgirly stuff, in the Greek cinema in the 60s and 70s, with some awesome musicals going out, but not with the stripping part. Unfortunately, Greece is still very far behind to take someone taking their clothes off. So it's all more of a chorus dancing rather than actual burlesque.
What was your first act or performance like? Did you do hosting first?
So I did a lot of hosting, and I was doing it for the burlesque group that I was dancing for, the Athens Swing Cats. And my teacher would not let me do burlesque on her stage because she thought I was not good enough, and she was not wrong. I was a really good dancer. I was not good at burlesque because there was no such a thing as burlesque in Greece, so I got to improvise a lot. But I was organizing my own small events, and I would do here and there. My first act was The King of the Dogs. It's a song from Iggy Pop, which was horrific.
Tell me about that. What was that act like?
To begin with, I'm very grateful there is not an evidence that they ever performed this act. There are only two pictures, and that's about it. Because filming with phones, it was not very sexy at the time, so I'm lucky. I was wearing a red pair of trousers and a waistcoat, and I was using a whip a lot.
Nice.
With a simple choreography, and I was going down to a big pair of boxers.
Ooh, a big pair of boxers.
I haven't shown my ass on the stage in burlesque the first many years out of my career. First time I went on a thong on stage,
really?
It was in 2014.
Whoa. I mean, I can just see your ass now in my mind. I can't imagine you ever covering it up. It's so great.
I was extremely body cautious for a long time. I never liked my body. I still don't like my body. So I'm still making changes to my body. But now I am more friends with it.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of a journey, isn't it? Especially with burlesque, when you are kind of making yourself in a kind of vulnerable position, being fully naked. And that's something that definitely takes a while to get used to. But having said that, I feel like I would rather be naked than doing like hosting, because I feel like there's such a different job. And it's quite an important job in a cabaret show, because you have to really carry the whole show and keep the energy up for the whole show. I think that's quite a hard job as well. How do you find hosting compared to doing, say, a burlesque act?
Oh, it's an extremely hard job, hosting, but I love it. It is very difficult because you need to pay attention to a lot of different things. One, you are responsible for the entire energy in the room. So if you fuck up the show, regardless of who is performing or how good the performers are, you're going to kill their act. Or they're going to kill the show, essentially. But you need to pay it to... I always ask the venue if there is any promo of drinks that I should put on. Also, I always ask the performers if there's anything specific that they want me to say. And it's very important as well that you're very sensitive to who you have in front of you. Like, you need to be witty to your audience, but not an asshole necessarily. And you have the teacher's role as well. You need to tell them what it is appropriate and what is not appropriate. We have seen a lot of cases on stage where the audience were wildly inappropriate, either verbally or physically. So it's a lot to do. And then you need to, like, when I was hosting a show in New Orleans, the owner of the place came and said, challenge them more, call out the Asians and the Blacks. And I'm like, no, this is racist as fuck. This is very problematic. I am going to challenge them heavily, but not this way. This is wrong on so many levels.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, you have to really be a natural speaker, and then dealing with people that might heckle or, you know, not having the energy go out of control. It's such an important job. I think people don't realize that the host really carries the energy, for sure.
I have taken a few hosting workshops, which was great and helped me very much get my mindset on how it's supposed to be done, because it took years until I say, okay, I believe I'm a good host. Ruben Kay is the major teacher for me. He was incredibly good at teaching how to host.
Yeah. It's probably a very rewarding job when you've got everyone cheering and laughing and just being really part of that whole experience that is a show.
But you're never on the backstage selfies, because you're constantly on stage with everybody else.
God damn it. And also, you don't really get to have much of a break, do you? Because you're always like, when the act is on the stage, you're kind of preparing yourself for when you have to go back on, because it's like very on, off, on, off. So you are very much having to concentrate for the whole time. It's not like you can just sit back in between and just relax.
No, it's very hard. But it's lovely. I love this challenge. It's a rush of adrenaline which sparks joy to my soul. Well, I don't have a soul, but if I had it, it would spark a joy there.
And you've performed in shows all over the world, like cabaret festivals and different kinds of events. Tell me a little bit about some of your, maybe your favorite experiences, or even, you know, mishap experiences. Ooh. As well.
Oh, I have mishaps as well. There are a few. So I love performing. I usually like venues and producers, because as you very well know, some producers can be extremely problematic. But some of my favorite are all the shows I do. I've done in Sweden, which is from Jean-Paul Bissart and Fräulein Frauke, in a fantastic venue. It's called Nollen. It's the most beautiful place on earth. But I also love, usually my favorite shows, they're very small shows. I like the, one of my favorite is Mademoiselle Boop in the Cabaret Mademoiselle in Belgium, which is a tiny place, but it's a crazy place. I absolutely loved every second of being there. Or in Poland, there is a group of very strong women who write history as we speak. They are considered dangerous women by the government because they're openly queer, they're strongly opinionated, they do burlesque in Poland. So I'm very inspired by these people.
Yeah, especially in Poland, where it's still very much not accepted to be queer. That's really cool and inspiring. I was supposed to perform at the Cabaret Mademoiselle in Belgium, but then it was locked down, so it didn't happen. It was like end of March last year. So it looks really cool. I hope I get to go there at some point. It looks really fun.
It's a fantastic place.
Yes. Yeah, I would definitely love to go there. Do you have any mishaps or like challenges that you've had to overcome on stage?
Oh, yes. At some point, I was performing in Glasgow at a very big theater for a charity event, and I was doing contortion and I was in a box. So they would put the box on stage and I would get out of the box. Tiny box. I had to dislocate my arm and my leg in order to get there.
Oh my God.
And they forgot to introduce me, so they went straight to the next act while I was locked in the box.
Oh my God, that's terrible. What?
And it was a very interesting experience.
Wait, so you were just in this box and they forgot, and did you just stay in the box? Like how?
I could not stay in the box for the whole set of the next person, so I asked to get out so I can put things to where they're supposed to be. And then right before it was my turn, I went into the box again.
Oh.
But I was locked in the box. I could not get out. Someone had to get me out. And also the stage had a 12% rake. That's the biggest rake in Europe. So I could not balance on any of my tricks either. It was a nightmare.
On an incline?
Yes.
Oh my God. Wow, that is terrifying. It just makes me feel a bit claustrophobic thinking about it. I've always wondered how contortionists manage to get in those box shapes.
Yeah, it's a process. You need the right box to begin with, but you also need to find the right shape to squeeze yourself.
Yeah. Another festival that I know that you've done that springs to mind is the Vienna Boylesque Festival in Austria, which is cool because I hadn't really come across that many festivals that were specifically boylesque. Can you tell me a bit about that and what it's like?
Absolutely. Well, it's not specifically boylesque, but it's boylesque oriented.
Mm.
So they do celebrate burlesque. They do celebrate all the gender spectrums of burlesque, which I love. It's one of the biggest festivals in Europe. They always bring a lot of people from America as well, which is a good time to exchange ideas and thoughts and get inspiration from. It's crazy. It's a very, very inclusive. You always have and always had, not only after it got sexy. They always had all colors, all genders, people of all abilities and people of all ethnicities. So it's, in my opinion, it's one of the most inclusive festivals that you can see. There are always two shows. Usually it's a Thursday and a Friday, and Saturday there is a big party. And there is always a mix of burlesque and boylesque. But you could say it's just one of the festivals where the ratio between boys and girls, or male-identified people and female-identified people, the ratio is a little more favorable towards the boys as usual. It could be 50-50. Like, there are a lot of wonderful female burlesque performers performing there. A lot of non-binary as well, which I find gorgeous every time.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I think it's really important that we have a wider diversity of genders within burlesque and cabaret and all the fun stuff, because there's space for everybody. It's not just for a certain type of person.
Totally. Totally.
And you have a lot of different styles of acts and looks. You've got like kind of dark, more fetishy looks. And then also I remember you had that fan dance. It was very ethereal, almost angelic, but you're never fully angelic. What inspires your performances?
Oh, it has changed a lot over the years. I used to get inspired mostly by films and theater, because I didn't have, like when I started in Greece, because I didn't have as much experience as real shows, which was very sad. But I can get inspired by politics. I can get inspired by the amazing women of my life. Most inspiring people of my life are women, and most women I know are inspiring. So to me, it's about the message I want to give. And the past few years, my message is always, be who you are, unapologetically. You can be a man. This is why it's always important to be introduced as a he and as a man, even if I'm in full drag. Purely because I think it's a powerful message to say that I am a man, very confident wearing female clothes or stereotypically female clothes, and doing things which could be stereotypically feminine or masculine, because I will still keep my hair, for example, on my facial hair. And I'm still feminist as fuck. And I'm still I'm still sex positive. And always I try to open a dialogue, either physically or just with my acts, with my straight-oriented people on open up your mind. Don't put yourself in a box. The box is not a safe space to be. Get yourself out of the box. So I do get inspiration from a lot of wonderful performers. I have a lot of performers which I like, from theater, from cinema, from the history of burlesque, because of the orb cabaret, but also from real humans. Like, music is a big thing for me. If I listen to a cool song and say, oh, I need to do something with this.
Yeah, I love that variety of inspirations. And you mentioned about doing drag, but being called a he and being referred to as a man. I love the way that you play with both masculine and feminine aesthetics. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you play with gender?
Absolutely. So again, I'm obviously a gay man, like very gay. So again, the fact that I am not getting into any of the stereotypical bodies of the gay world, like I'm not a bear, I'm not a twink, I'm not an otter, I'm something in between of all these. And there is a huge toxic idea in the world which you have to be masked. You may be very gay, but you have to look straight. I never understood that. So there is a big movement started by Jet Adore in America called Reimagine Macho, where you get like Jet Adore, a great friend, fantastic inspiration, has a very masculine body, but he has all the outrageous, ridiculous outfits, which they could be very stereotypically not macho. So this is pretty much what I do, but I have put it to the extremes. Because my body is not masculine by default, I don't mind wearing small corsets and very high heels and very intense makeup, but not only drag makeup, just intense makeup or a dress.
Yes.
But I could wear a tuxedo and a pair of sparkly heels. So I like exploring myself through that, but I love giving the point to the society that, you know, you can be a man and wear heels and it's okay. Or you can be a woman and wear trainers and sweatsuits. Like, I never understood why people would limit themselves on their options.
Yeah, you can do anything. You can mix it up. I feel like especially men feel like they can't be or shouldn't be feminine. And it's something, I think it's really attractive though, when a man is really comfortable with his femininity as well as his masculinity. I think that is such a hot trait. And, you know, we all need to kind of embrace both spectrums within ourselves.
Oh, I agree. Most times that women hit on me, like in real matter, is when I am in character. Because in real life, I'm a very boring looking person. But when I'm in character, like if I'm on makeup, this is when women will genuinely flirt with me.
Yeah, they love it.
I did not know that until I experienced it a lot.
I think you're quite a sexy person on stage, or very sexy on stage, but also off stage. You just have this kind of flirtatious persona, which I love. Where do you get that confidence, and what do you love about sexiness?
Oh, okay. The little secret is that I am not a confident person, and I never in my life thought I'm sexy. And this is not me fishing compliments. I actually never thought I was. So one of the reasons I do this job is because when I transform to my character, when I get into character, I can pretend to be sexy, or I can pretend to be confident very well. So it's all about theater. And it's empowerment. This is, again, the reason I like real physical shows as opposed to online shows, because there is something about the energy you get from the audience which makes you stronger. But in real life, I'm a very shy person. I blush a lot. I don't know how to flirt like a real human being. This is why I will just come into face and say, "Hi, you're fucking hot." Or, "Hey, you're sexy." I speak flirt better than I speak human.
I feel like I really resonate with that as well, because I feel like I'm quite shy. And then when I'm on stage, that's when my extroverted self comes out. But that's kind of the only space where I'm like that, really. And I think a lot of performers are like that as well. They're like introverted extroverts.
I mean, it's insane, because I have seen both of your sides, both the very shy and both the "don't mess with me, I'm going to crush your skull down." which it's fantastic. It's magical.
Yeah, I think it's fun to play with that, and definitely embrace being quiet and soft as well, that I've kind of been on a journey with through my life. And then also having that dual side of me that's just really exaggerated and borderline aggressive and really powerful. And I think it's fun that performers can have these two sides of them and play with that.
Well, one of the reasons I really admire you as a person and as an artist is because you have been very open about your vulnerable side. And it's something I try to do myself as well, like to tell people, you know, you may see this on stage, but reality check sometimes is important. We are humans. We hurt, we're shy, we are tired, we're injured, and we are scared.
Yeah.
We are vulnerable. We have issues. We have a lot of things to work with ourselves. We don't have a perfect life, and we don't have all the confidence we pretend to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like social media is just a very small sliver of what actually happens in real life. It's like an aspirational version of ourselves. So I always like to be real and be like, this is cool and me doing something crazy and, you know, bendy, but also there's this other side as well that's human and vulnerable and is imperfect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. And I also want to talk to you a little bit about your crazy bendiness, because anyone that doesn't know John is freakishly bendy and I love it. Have you always been flexible?
That's a hard question to answer. I will say yes, but we are all born very flexible. Every human on earth is freakishly flexible. We just lose it as we go by. But because I was dancing from very, very young age, and then when I was 4, I also started martial arts. Always my body was doing things that was not supposed to. So I guess I maintain my flexibility. But also, I don't really consider myself freakishly flexible.
What? Like my... Wait a minute.
Okay, my absolute idol in contortion is Alexei Bodolorodko. He's the most bendy human on earth. If you don't know who this person is, just go and Google him. It's almost, he doesn't exist. So, yes, I am a little more flexible than an average person, or a lot more flexible than an average person, but still, no matter how bendy you are, you always feel you're not enough, which is a struggle. But on the other hand, we keep training and it keeps getting better.
Yeah, I think flexibility is kind of a wonderful journey to be on because it is hard, but you also learn a lot about your body, and a lot of it's mindset as well, isn't it? It's to do with what you believe you can do. John has pushed me to my limits. So I used to do privates with John every week, and I remember one occasion when we did middle splits, and I was like, middle splits, I've got this, I'm good at these. And then John's like forcing my legs open to places they did not want to go.
Yeah, but look how bendy you are.
Yes, it definitely pays off.
And she would always come with a friend because she was still afraid of me.
Yes,
for whatever
that
reason.
Is true. I used to bring a friend to slightly distract John.
I'm not easily distracted. Up to 12 people, I can make sure that no one cheats.
Yeah, John is a hard taskmaster in class, by the way. You are evil.
Yeah. Oh, thank
but
you.
We love
you're
you.
Such a charmer.
How do you train your flexibility now? Is it something that has changed over time?
Now it's a big word. I was very motivated in training in the middle of the pandemic. I was not in the beginning and I was not in the end. So it has been a big journey for me because I had a very big injury on my knee. I am missing a ligament. I ripped a ligament. So I'm not supposed to be able to do splits. And I'm not supposed to be walking 10-inch heels. Like, my doctors don't like any of this shit. So it took me 2 years to get my splits and my over splits, for example, my front splits again, which was a very painful thing because going from being able to jump into splits at any given moment from a big height without any warm-up to not being able to get half of a split is very infuriating, and it can get you very sore. So I lost a lot of my mojo after my accident. And then lockdown has not been good for me, so I lost all of my motivation, but I am getting back to it. Usually my training is longer sessions of short intensity as opposed to my classes, where shorter classes with high intensity. But I find at this age, going a little slower with my body because of my injuries is a good way to go. Plus, I'm a very lazy person.
Yeah, I feel like I was exactly the same as you during lockdown. I had a bit of motivation in the middle, mainly when it was warm and it was sunny and I felt bit better and bendier, and then just, you know, winter, autumn came and I was like, oh, and lost the motivation again.
I hadn't done any exercise since December, and I've only done two challenges with a group of people, where it was squatting challenges and push-up challenges, which I nailed them. But I was very surprised. I became like a Viking for the full minute. I had to do as many as I could, and my numbers were exquisite. They were very scary. I could not walk or move the next 3 days. But that was all the exercise I've done. And nowadays, which I've started doing group classes again, online classes, and work out myself, I feel that I hurt every time because I am not as fit as I used to be.
Yeah, I feel like the journey, especially with the situation that we're in with the pandemic, it's never going to be linear. It's going to be very like up and down. It's affected us all in many different ways. So I'm sure like a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to that as well, being motivated some days and then some days just feeling absolutely poo.
And it's okay. And what is important is to not beat yourself for not doing it. If your body's telling you sit down and watch TV, maybe this is what you need at the time so you can heal, because we all go through situations we would never think we would ever in our lives. So it's okay to be unmotivated, and it's okay to for the whole universe to be super fit and active and you staying with your jammies and bag of crisps in your bed, because these days are important too.
Yes, yeah, exactly. If we all need to be really, really kind to ourselves and just take it slow, one day at a time.
Yeah. I always say to my kids, you have to be nice to yourself. My job is to be asshole with you. Your job is to be nice with you.
I love that.
Yeah.
That basically sums up you.
Well, I give hard love, but it always comes from an actual place of love and an interest. Mm-hmm. But if someone tells me this is happening, then we will work it. Plus, I always want to know the mental being of my students. Because if you have a shitty day, this will translate on your body on the day. I cannot push you where I would push you if you had an awesome day.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's all in the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all kind of connected. I would love to take us into the love, learn, and dream section of the podcast. So love, firstly, what do you love most about your job?
The fact that I could explore aspects of myself in a way that I could not do during psychotherapy. And the fact that I can give a message to my audience. It's pointless to go on stage if you don't have something to say, if you don't have a message to pass. And I do try to inspire people as much as possible on a few different fields. But also, I love the energy you get, the kick you get when you're on stage and you have a live audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
And traveling.
I know, traveling. Oh, it feels like a lifetime ago.
I feel extremely lucky, not because I have been to places, because when you go for work, you usually don't see the places you go.
True.
Which is this is another thing that people think, oh my God, you've seen the world. I'm like, no, I've seen a lot of hotels and a lot of theaters and a lot of pubs. But the fact that traveling, you meet all these wonderful people who are all very interesting. They have something very interesting to say. I'm privileged to say that I have good friends around the world. Actual friends that we speak on a daily basis on serious things. So it's magical.
Yeah, travel is such a wonderful thing. And it's so true as well about when you're going somewhere for a gig, even if you did have time to do other stuff, if you end up spending like money doing like touristy stuff, then all the money that you just got paid is gone. Then yeah. It's not really work. It's more like a hobby. So it is unfortunate that we don't always get to see as much of places as people might think we do.
Well, I have performed in Berlin about 10 times. And I can say I have seen the amount of tourist attractions that a person would see in a single holiday. So every time I do it bit by bit in order to say that I have seen the things I'm supposed to see when I go to Berlin. But yeah, you don't see things. You don't experience as much as you would normally.
Yeah, I love that you've been there 10 times, which is amazing. You've just about seen enough of what someone would see on one trip.
Yes. It's like I hadn't seen the Holocaust monument till the last time I went there because I had no time, no space.
Yeah.
Which is it's ridiculous because I always go, I usually perform the day I go and the next day and then the next morning leave. And usually there is a little bit of party at the end of the night, at the end of the show, which Berlinian parties are a little more wild than any other parties in the rest of the world.
You've got to do a bit of partying.
Like, I have been to Bergheim a couple of times. It's a life experience.
Yes, I haven't been. I would like to go, but is it true that to get in, you have to like dress down? So you have to look a bit more like, I don't know, just not dressed up, basically.
Oh. Ooh, I have read a lot of articles trying to break the code of how to get into Bergheim.
What is the code?
To be honest, I don't know. Both times I went with people who knew very well the people of Bergheim. Mm. So I did not even have to queue, which was excellent.
Yes, that's what you need.
I did not have to queue and I did not have to pay. But I was not particularly dressed down either. And neither did my friends. I don't know what is the code, because there are some people who wear total black and some people who wear no clothes. Like, it's a
yeah,
an interesting place to be.
Yeah, my friend said that when she didn't wear any makeup and then she just wore like a black baggy t-shirt was the time that she got in, compared to when she had like dressed up the other times. So I just thought that was really funny.
You definitely cannot get dressed in like what you would wear in a nice night out.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't either, because there are a lot of things happening. There's a lot of dancing.
What's happening in there? Tell me.
Okay. There is a lot of dancing. It's a massive place with I don't know how many thousand people at any given point in there. But there are a lot of naughty things happening. This slide thing in the end of the night, which I have also read a lot, it doesn't exist. So the floor is not full slippery because of all the bodily fluids that people drink. That's not a thing, or at least I have not experienced it. But yes, there is a lot of inappropriate activity and there are a lot of drugs involved, which don't do drugs, they're bad for you. And frankly, I was very sober there because people were doing ketamine and I'm like, I'm not a horse, I don't do these things. It's not for me. So everybody was drinking water and drugs. I was drinking gin and gin.
What is the biggest lesson you've learned along your journey?
That when you perform, it's not about you, it's about your audience. If you go on stage to feed your ego, as I was doing when I started performing, people will know your performances are going to be bad, and there is absolutely, and it's disgusting to ask for money so you can go on stage and feed your ego. You can feed your ego after you have given 150% of your soul to your audience. So when I made this shift in my head, and it wasn't all about me, but it was all about my audience, then my life changed. And that was interesting. And also that the more people that follow you, yes, it's nice that you get the attention, but you have the responsibility to speak about the things which are important, to educate people, to stand up for those who are not as strong in the field, and to really voice the group that is following you.
Yeah, that like there's a social justice kind of responsibility that you have as well.
Yeah, a queen has a lot of privileges but has a lot of duties. Yeah. You cannot get recognition without respecting the recognition and the support and giving back to the people who are following you. And it's not about the looks. It's not even about a good performance. But it's about, am I true to my audience? Am I honest with my audience? Am I representing my audience? Am I lifting my audience? Your audience is there to lift you, and your audience is there to pay your rent. So the least you can do about the people who are following you is to lift them up as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such good, quite profound advice, actually, for all performers, that we have a duty of care to those, you know, that give us all the glory and, you know, their energy and their applause, but we also have something to give back to them.
Well, if you pay like 10, 15 pounds or 5 pounds or no pounds, you just buy a drink to watch me perform, I have to honor this money, because most people who come to our shows have jobs that they crush their souls. Like, we are privileged enough to have a job which is lifting our soul. But they're coming to us to have a good time and to forget their gray lives and have a little bit of sparkle. So we need to give the sparkle.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really good advice. The last question, Dream. So this one's super fun. In a world where you had unlimited budget, unlimited access to any venue or place, and no health or safety restrictions, what would you do in your dream routine?
I don't have a dream routine. Usually budget is not what limits me. It kind of is. I always wanted to have a huge group routine, like the Cotton Club, with a huge group of people holding feather fans, doing the classic shows you've seen from the 20s till today, like the Cotton Club shows. This is something I always wanted to do. because I think it's beautiful and it's very pleasing to see, in my opinion. But I never had a dream routine. Funnily enough, I just bought a new prop, for which I'm excited about. And I'm going to be paying for this prop for a very long time. But that's exciting because things are coming up. But no, I have dream venues. I really want to perform like at Café de Paris.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes, you should do that.
Because Marlene Dietrich, it was one of Marlene Dietrich's favorite venues. And Marlene Dietrich is my biggest icon in life, not only in performance life, but in life in general. She was an extraordinary human. So I always wanted to perform on this stage. So if anybody hears us, book me to perform at Café de Paris, please.
Book John. Do it now. And just going back to, you mentioned the Cotton Club. For those that don't know, can you share what that is?
Yes. So it would be a theatrical experience of cabaret, I would say, with a lot of... The aesthetic is what we call today the classic cabaret and classic burlesque. So you always had a chorus of, traditionally, you have a chorus of beautiful women dancing around the main lead character. There are a lot of group acts, and people would also have a dinner while they're watching this. So I always wanted to have that, and I always wanted to create a full-on long show. And one-man show with group acts.
Like a full-on production, like a review.
Yes, I always wanted to have a full-on cabaret production.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That would be amazing. Where can we find you online?
Ooh. On Grindr or Tinder? No, I'm joking. I mean, you can, but no. You can find me on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Patreon. I'm a little bit of a social media whore, so you name it, I have it probably.
And you have your contortion stretch classes on your Patreon.
Well, people seem to be as scared as you are when it comes to any kind of classes with me. So it's not only contortion in my Patreon, but there are a lot of absolute beginners videos for people who cannot touch their toes. So they're not all horrifically cruel and difficult things to do. Some of them are. So it is for more advanced people as well. But no, it's for absolutely everyone. It focuses on flexibility and strength because it's not safe, nor wise to get bendy without getting strong. So yes, this is what it is about.
Absolutely. Go and have a look at John's Patreon and get all your bendy things.
Yay. And to Kitty's Patreon, because it's Kitty Valore is one of the most inspirational women I know.
Ah, thank you. High praise from you, John. Absolute icon.
Well, you are. So first time I performed with Kitty, it was at a show where I had a really bad time. Because not very nice people were there, but I'm not going to get into this conversation. And Kitty was dancing, and it was the first time I saw her. And I thought she would be absolute diva, but no, she was she was a Kitty. We hit it off straight away, and I fell in love with her and her partner straight away. So, and every time we perform, we have such a good time together.
We do. I can't wait to perform again and perform together and just have that vibe and that energy from the audience.
That's another thing I like about my job. It's not the stage per se, but the backstage. If you have a cast of people who like each other or there is some sort of chemistry, backstage can be the most wonderful place to be ever.
Yes. Yeah. It's nice to see the process as well. Like everyone kind of like transforming themselves and seeing, you know, the everyday person morphing themselves into their extra ordinary persona.
From frog to prince.
From frog to prince, yeah. But exactly. That's a secret.
I know, right? That's why we don't have a camera on right now.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because I'm in my frog stage at the moment.
Yeah, me too. Just casual and some, you know, little comfy clothes in lockdown. Oh my God, I can't leave.
Absolutely.
Joggers. Anyway, John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's been amazing. We're going to hop over to the bonus section on Patreon. So if you want to hear more, go over there and listen to some extra juicy bonus snippets. Otherwise, thank you to our listeners. And as always, I will see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye, people.
Thank you so much for joining us today at the Pussy Parlor. If you're left wanting more, we have extra pussy episodes on Patreon, where you get extended interviews with bonus questions. Just search for Kitty Velour Patreon. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Pussy Parlor. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps support the pod. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Stay filthy and stay fabulous. See you soon.